Before long, we'll be where it would have taken mankind millions of years of learning to reach.
And what will Mitchell learn on getting there? Will he know what to do with his power?
That's the big agenda here, is undermining the whole idea of journalism, and that's the real thing to worry about.
The good old Ministry of Truth has another outlet.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence instead of respecting it, improving it, challenging it. But not here. Where knowledge is power, this is Powerful Radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth. Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepanchik. On this episode, we'll feature an interview with Bertha Escamilla, longtime Chicago political activist and a member of Citizens Against Torture, to discuss her experience with police injustice and police-related torture in Chicago. But now, a collection of news about media and democracy from the show Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
A new bill has been introduced in the House that would require all public information from most federal government agencies to be made available online. Ellen Miller, executive director of the Sunlight Foundation, says that the Public Online Information Act would redefine what public information actually means.
The way the government has interpreted what public information means is to print out a copy of a report or a document or a database and put it in a manila file folder and put it in the basement of an office building and eventually truck it out to some kind of warehouse storage and essentially lock it up in a cabinet where no one can see it.
The information hidden in those cabinets is only available in Washington, D.C. between the hours of 9 and 5.
Our thought is that government needs to come into the 21st century and understand that it's actually their responsibility to provide information in a way that citizens will actually access it.
The law would help citizens gain a better understanding of how their government functions.
It provides a measure of accountability for what government does in our name. It gives information to citizens, enabling them to ask their lawmakers questions in town hall meetings. It provides the kind of information that lawmakers can ask of the executive branch, you know, how this program is working or how this program is not working. So there are a number of very, very significant benefits, public benefits, from this legislation.
Having all sorts of government information is a kind of public good, Miller says. There's no telling what kinds of useful applications and mashups will be created. Imagine the array of amazing tools created using government weather information or GPS satellites being extended to all kinds of federal data.
Citizens need to know, citizens want to know, citizens are accessing information about things that matter to them. And I think it's paternalistic to suggest that we're going to only make this kind of data available because we don't really know what citizens want. So if we can put the data online, require it to be online, and provide a system where it's easy to find, you know, keyword searches through data, we, I think, will be stunned as a nation as to how this information is used to create a better democracy and a more engaged citizenry.
For more information about the Public Online Information Act, go to sunlightfoundation.org. And now, a special commentary by Media Minute's own Candace Clement.
It's starting to feel like we're stuck in the media twilight zone. While channel surfing the other day, I came across a fresh-faced young reporter for a cable network aggressively following an important person around an airport and refusing to let up with his questions. The unwilling interviewee grew angry, suddenly snapping and shouting at the reporter to leave him alone. "Do you think you're immune to questions?" the reporter shouted back repeatedly. I was speechless. "Do you think you're immune to questions?" It was perfect. Such a simple and powerful question. This would have been the most hopeful piece of journalism I had seen in years if it weren't for one small detail. This was not a journalist from CNN or Fox or MSNBC. The exchange was between an E! Network reporter and a Hollywood celebrity. And that's when it clicked. Could the news media learn something from the paparazzi? I started to imagine that paparazzi reporter in the press pool, doggedly pursuing a line of questioning and refusing to take no comment for an answer. In an age of woefully tame media, old DC journalists could learn a thing or two from reporters traditionally considered at the bottom of the news industry's barrel. Imagine if Washington journalists were as aggressive and relentless as a paparazzo desperately trying to get a Brangelina quote, or demanded real answers from the Wall Street investment firms who tanked the economy, got a taxpayer bailout, and then paid out exorbitant bonuses to executives. Mainstream media are increasingly using cost-cutting measures like slashing jobs and reorienting their newsroom staff to cover the kind of soft and cheap-to-produce entertainment and gossip stories that the paparazzi specialize in. Consolidated media has meant only a certain kind of journalist makes it to the top and gets press credentials, the type who asks softball questions that politicians can hit with their eyes closed and that don't compromise the media company's own interests. With CNN's homepage regularly plastered with celebrity news, it doesn't seem unfair to ask journalists to learn a basic lesson from the paparazzi. Don't take no for an answer.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit www.freepress.net.
You're listening to The Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepinchik. We now feature an interview with Bertha Escamilla, longtime Chicago political activist and a member of Citizens Against Torture, to discuss her experience with police injustice and police-related torture in Chicago. The following interview with Bertha Escamilla was recorded on Wednesday, March 3rd, 2010.
We are involved with the Citizens Against Torture. We felt that it was important to try to bring out a report that people would be able to read and see how patterns are on police officers and the areas where they were located. And we send them out questionnaires. And by sending out questionnaires, the inmates returned with the replies as to what type of torture they endured. And that's how we started doing all of our database. And it's sad that we weren't able to really send out the books that we wanted to these politicians. And we did send them out to a few, I should say, but there's a lot of books that are left. We did need funds. We weren't able to do a lot of things because there's only four of us, and there was really no funds, you know, for anything, and it took us so long to do it to begin with. But Aaron Patterson did give us a donation, as well as a few other people, and that helped, but it still was not enough to really, really put it out there. And, you know, politicians really already know about all this. It's just that they seem to have a deaf ear. And I don't know why there's not enough politicians that are out there trying to support us. But I honestly feel that maybe there should be a shorter term for these politicians. Maybe that would help. They have been in their positions long enough, and it doesn't seem like they're really doing much for justice as far as people going to them complaining about what happened to them. And, you know, they may try helping a little bit, but it's not enough. I don't know what is enough for them to finally be able to support people who are wrongfully convicted. But as I said, I honestly feel that their term should be limited to only 2 years. Maybe this way here, things can change. In Texas, they don't keep them in office that long. It's only a 2-year term. However, there needs to still be more work to be done. There's still these police officers that are out there doing the same thing. If they're not killing people, they're taking their lives. They don't care who it is, whether it's black or Latinos. There are a few white, but it's more Latinos and black people that are being snatched away from their families. They don't care whether they're innocent or not. They just want you to make a confession. They'll beat you, they'll torture you, they'll threaten you, just like how they did with my son. My son's name is Nick Escamilla. He was married at the time. He had a job. He had a wife. He had a two-year-old daughter.
At the time of what?
There was a murder that took place back in 1992. A shooting occurred near Curie High School in Chicago. And my son did not know anything about it. And it's the same police officers that are always in the news that people talk about. And, of course, they are the detectives of John Burge. My son had Detective Kenneth Boudreaux, Detective John Halloran, and Detective James O'Brien. There's so many cases that have been reversed, and people have been exonerated by these cases, and it's far too many cases, okay? That should have been a keynote right there for people to do something. I mean, I don't know how much more or how many more people have to be, you know, released before something can happen. My son was, he had to do 14 and a half years for a crime he did not commit. He was threatened, he was beaten, that if he did not cooperate, that they would take his wife, who was pregnant at the time, and they would lock her up and make sure that she had the baby in prison, and that they would take away his little girl, who was 2 years old at the time. And when that happened, my son said, okay, I'll write the confession. And that's what pretty much is, are the things that they do. I mean, they can't find anything else. There was no evidence. There was no witnesses. There was no weapons. Only the police officers that are always snatching people from the street and causing them to make confessions and to put them away.
Why was your son targeted?
My son was targeted because my son at one time was in a gang. He was in a 2-6 gang. And because once you're in a gang, they think that you are involved. Somehow or another, there was a hearsay of one of the other boys that was also tortured and threatened that if he didn't include my son and these two other boys, that they would charge him and they would do things to his family. So he told the detectives that, it was Michael Morales. Yes, it was Nick Escamilla. And my son did not even know him. But the young man went to the attorney after like 2-3 months later and told him what had happened. And when he went to trial for the young man who was supposed to have been the shooter, he went to the trial and explained to them that the only reason why he did that was because he was threatened. He was held for 2 days. That if he didn't point out these other two men, my son and this other guy, that he would go down for a murder charge and that something would happen to his family. Now, my attorney never used that at our trial. I don't know why, but it's not just the fault of police officers. It's from the police officers to the prosecutors, public defenders, judges. It's all the way, you know, they're all in this together. Once they are public defenders, they are prosecutors, they go in and become judges. So by them becoming judges, how could they give you a fair trial when here they prosecuted somebody that they locked up, and now they cannot even give the man a fair trial. So things like that have to change.
Going back for a moment to the circumstances about your son, he was in jail for 14 and a half years, you said, but given this array of circumstances against him, despite the fact that there was no evidence pinning him to the crime for which he was alleged, how is he freed?
Well, because he did his time.
He was sentenced to jail for 14 and a half years.
No, he was sentenced to 29 and a half years. And at that time, you only had to do 50% of your time. This was in 1992.
So that's why he basically went to jail. He was sentenced, and he was ultimately freed because he had served his time.
Exactly.
And it was the case of your son that, I presume, had catapulted you into political activism on police torture and related issues. Is that correct?
That's correct. I've always trusted and believed in the police. I've never thought that something like this could ever happen to me. When I would see it on television about police being accused of beating up somebody, I thought, oh my God, how crazy can that be? Why would a kid complain about a police officer complaining about being tortured or abused? Until this finally happened to me, that's when I finally realized that all of this time things are happening this way. And it breaks up the family. I mean, they snatch a man or a lady or a young girl's life. They take them away. The family suffers. They suffer. And the police officers and the officials go up the ladder and have a better career. I don't know how these people can sleep at night. You know, other people are in shock because of what happened to their loved one. They cannot believe that justice was denied for them. And there was nothing to hide. We tried doing everything for my son, and this is the way it goes with any family. But yet every month or every few months, you always hear of someone coming out of prison innocent. I mean, if that doesn't tell you something, I don't know what will. I mean, it's not only Burge. This is throughout the city of Chicago.
You're referring to John Burge.
Yes. It's not John Burge and his detectives. It's not just them. This is throughout the city of Chicago. John Burge and his detectives are somebody that have been out there for several years. Years. And nothing has ever happened to them until last year when they charged him with charges, not torture, but other charges, and I hope he rots in jail. And I just cannot believe how they can do this to innocent people. They just don't care. I don't know how to say that anymore, and it just took a lot out of people. People are tired, people died, people, and they couldn't even go to their wakes, and this is just a business that they take on, and we're the ones that make them get rich.
Going to the matter of your involvement in political activism on this front, you've been active with Citizens Against Torture and other groups to try to remedy this. In your opinion, do you think that that's been making a difference? And if so, in what ways?
Well, yes. I think it has made somewhat of a difference. Governor Ryan exonerated a few people, Aaron Patterson, Madison Hobley, Leroy Orange, Stanley Howard. That's something that has not happened. And the moratorium was put on. They held a moratorium. That was something that never would have happened if people were not out there to support that. I mean, it takes a lot of effort and work, hard work, to go out there and do what they have to do. So there's a difference there. But a lot more needs to happen. A lot more.
What are some of the things that you would suggest should happen to follow up in this line of activism?
Well, we need to have more people. We need to, as I said, we need to change the terms of politicians. I honestly feel that that may be a part. And we just need to you know, get together and keep on fighting. I mean, there's a lot of things that we have done, and there's a lot more that we need to do. But it's hard to explain, you know, because you actually have to be in the situation to go through what people go through. I mean, some of these people have life without parole. Some people are on lockdown 24/7. When I would go visit my son at the beginning, he could not even look at me in the eye. And I tried to hold back my tears. We would take his kids to go and see him. And they would be happy on their way to visit their dad. And coming home, they cried all the way home. They wanted to be with their daddy. They couldn't understand why their father was locked up.
What has been the circumstance of your son since his release? How is he faring?
Well, he's been out almost 2 years. He's been trying to get a job. When he first got out, he went to Jules. He went to Target. He went to Walmart. And my son's very intelligent, and he has degrees. And, he also went to a car wash to get a job, and they all said no. That was very degrading. That was enough to have to go try to get a job like that and for them to tell you no because of your background. So it's like you're labeled as a murderer. We, his family, are labeled, I'm labeled, as having a son who had committed a murder. There was no way that my son could really do anything. I mean, he filed all his motions, he went and did all of his remedies, and because there was no DNA, people like that who's incarcerated and doesn't have DNA, it's very hard for them to prove their innocence. So that's another issue. But yes, my son came home and he was very, very different. He would lock himself up in a room when I would have company. He would, you know, and this is his family. Or a few of my friends, he would go in his room and lock himself in the room. And he was just totally different. He, like, was waiting to see if somebody was going to tell him when to eat or whatever. He was very emotional. I mean, but yet when you would go and see him in prison, you would think he was in control. When he came home, you could see that he wasn't. It takes a very big toll on people, and it's always the young people that are taken.
For people who are listening to this,
Dad.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mitchell. What was that?
No. You were going to say something. Go ahead, please.
No, I was saying that it's so sad for families to have to go through something like that. I mean, everybody is tortured in so many different ways. I really don't know what is worse, but torture is torture, and especially if you have to stay in prison for a crime you did not commit. Or when you get beat up at a police station and you're telling them that you're innocent, I don't know what happened. Give me a lawyer. Let me call my family. My daughter-in-law was calling the police station every half hour, different police stations, and they would tell her he was not there. She kept on calling 51st and Wentworth. We have phone records. And they kept on denying he was there. We finally called the day after he made a confession. That's when they allow you to make your phone call.
After the confession?
Yes.
Wow. For those who are listening to this broadcast, what would you say to them to encourage them to help to get involved on this issue or on related issues?
Well, you know, it's hard on both sides. The family who's suffering because of the lost person in their lives, and then the other family suffers because they lost their loved one to going into prison. It's very sad. People would probably try to encourage you not to, but you do have to. You have to stay focused. You have to continue to support your loved one. They need that. And I go and see a couple of people. I write to them. I used to write to a lot of people, but it became too much for me. But we would need to ask people, as we always do, and as any other organization, is to get involved. And I know for a fact, because I've been out there for 14 years, I know for a fact that people are tired, people are sick, or people are taking care of a parent who's sick with dementia or whatever, as I did for like 4 years, and then my mom just recently passed, so it was very hard. But it's very important to get involved. And we need to help people in order to try to get justice. You know, people think, well, it's not going to happen, you know, but people never thought that we would get the moratorium, and we did. So, I mean, it took a long time to get this, and it took a lot of work, you know, and we have to just keep on fighting to try to get these police officers indicted. I mean, they're the ones that committed a crime, and they are allowed to still keep on doing it. And then they protect them. So, I mean, where is the justice? They can commit crimes because they have a badge and a gun, and they are allowed to do whatever they can, and they support them. Who is there to support us?
We've been speaking with Bertha Escamilla. She is a longtime Chicago political activist involved in a number of groups in past and present, including Enough is Enough, the Campaign Against the Death Penalty, and Citizens Against Torture. And she's been speaking with us about her experience on these and related issues. Bertha, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Mitchell.
That was an interview with Bertha Escamilla, recorded on March 3rd, 2010. We'll be right back. Listen to all past episodes of the Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.